You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K24. It's myself, Momuzi, alongside me, my brother, my esteemed colleague on this show, the one and only GM extraordinaire, Mr. Scott Perry. How you doing, sir?
Doing great, Mo. How you doing? How's the last couple of days been after that championship and soaking in for you and your Boston Celtics?
Man, I've been celebrating like I was on the team. I've been celebrating like I was averaging 25 and 5 in the finals.
I bet you have. Oh, man. But I'm sure we can't hear all the stories on there.
No. We're going to keep that. We're going to keep that aside. You know what I'm talking about? That ain't for the podcast. You're going to keep it moving. It's good to be back. Shout out to all the listeners who hollered at me saying that they missed the show. We're back. Don't worry. We're here all off-season. We're going to be talking drafts coming up later this week. We're going to be talking free agency, all sorts of good stuff. But with the GM extraordinaire in the house, Mr. Scott Perry, big part of the GM's job is finding the right coach for the team. And we've seen a few coaching moves over the recent weeks and so in the NBA. And I wanted to get some of your thoughts on them. So let's start with the one that everyone's talking about. The Lakers ended up not going with Dan Hurley. They've gone with J.J. Redick, who will be the new head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Scott, what was your immediate reaction upon hearing this?
Well, first of all, let me issue a public congratulations to J.J. Redick. Happy for him. What an awesome opportunity for him to go to one of the most iconic franchises in the NBA. And this being his first coaching job. Now, I worked with J.J. Redick. I was a front office executive in Orlando, so I got to know J.J. some there. Very bright about the game of basketball. He was a cerebral player. So I'm not surprised that this is something that he's wanted to do as coach. The big question in this that he's going to have to answer is, as a first-time coach and hasn't done this before, how is he going to lead and manage men? I don't have any question that he understands the game. He sees the game. He can impart his knowledge, game plans, all those things. But the biggest part, through my experiences over the years, and I'm a former coach as well, is how you galvanize, manage, and lead men. And that's all 15 of them. Now, it's known that he has a relationship with LeBron James. You know, that's going to be important to have the buy-in from your top players being LeBron and Anthony Davis. But there's 13 other guys as well. You got to get them to buy in as well. Now, it's LeBron and AD can help in the beginning with that, but that's something he's got to sustain. And he knows that coming into the door. I think J.J. realizes that as a former player, he knows that he's never done this before. But there have been guys that have gone down this path, former players with no coaching experience, and some have had good success. I mean, you know, you can go back to, you know, Mark Jackson, Doc Rivers.
Steve Kerr.
You know, done good jobs. Didn't go quite as well for a Steve Nash, but again, the precedents have been there. The difference in him taking over the Lakers job as opposed to some of those other jobs as first-time head coaches is all the external noise and the expectations that come with that job. Regardless of what we say here, because he's with the Lakers, and if LeBron James is back there and Anthony Davis is back there, there's going to be an expectation that they win big and challenge in the Western Conference to be one of the top teams. But you and I know, Mo, currently constructed, this roster is not good enough to be there. They've shown you that. So we'll see.
Yeah, to address some of the things you said, I think getting the buy-in from the team, I think because you have LeBron James, who's such a unique player on your roster now with so much experience, and the players all look up to him on that roster. And I think if he gives the co-sign to J.J. Redick, which he has already done through his podcast, then I think the rest of the roster will follow. Anthony Davis is an intriguing one, though, because J.J. Redick didn't have him on his All-NBA defensive ballots. So he didn't consider Anthony Davis one of the top 10 defensive players in the NBA last season, which I thought was an interesting thing to know. I'll see how Anthony Davis reacts to that. Whether he can match that. I think the big thing, though, for a first-time coach coming in is assembling the right assistants. You know, there's rumors about Rajon Rondo or JJ's former coach, Van Gundy, as well, coming in and being assistants there. And I think having that leadership and experience of the assistant coaches as well can be crucial to him doing his job correctly, because a lot of people don't understand how much of an impact the defensive coordinator, the offensive coordinator, the guys who work individually with the players, they all have on the team. And the one thing I'll say about coaching, Scott, I don't know, do you watch Game of Thrones?
I do not, Mo. I've heard Scott, a lot about it.
It's the off season. You've got to watch Game of Thrones, right? First of all, you've got to watch that. I've been watching House of Dragon, the sequel. I watched it last night.
Okay.
But coaching in the NBA, I can't say too much about this publicly, but it's a lot like Game of Thrones, because there are a lot of teams in the NBA, and I'm sure you're aware of this, whether you want to comment on it or not, where there's assistant coaches who are kind of plotting on the downfall of the head coach so they can take his spot. And you saw even how this played out with Dan Hurley and JJ Redick, the way that they position themselves and leverage organizations and whatnot to get to where they are. It's a cutthroat business being a coach in the NBA. It's not all sunshine and rainbows. So I think getting the right team around JJ coaching-wise that not only have experience, but that he can trust. Because the worst thing for JJ would be to have an assistant coach who's probably got a better CV coaching-wise than he does, who's secretly plotting, all right, cool, let's give JJ a little run. If it all goes wrong by the trade deadline, they might just get rid of him.
That key word, trust, it's huge when you're formulating the staff. And JJ's going to need people around him that he can trust, to your point, that are going to be giving him the suggestions, because ultimately he's the decision maker. But as an assistant, you give suggestions about what you see, what you know, what's going on, that's going to be helpful to the team at large. So he's got to have a group, an experienced group around him will be very important. A selfless group, this understands that, look, we're here for the betterment of JJ Redick as the head coach and the Los Angeles Lakers as a whole. And so that's going to be important in putting that staff together, because it is a long, arduous road. And look, I've been an assistant and a head coach, and it's easy to go home at night as an assistant coach and say, oh, I would have done this, I would have done that. When you move over those 6 inches to become a head coach, that's an entirely different world. And JJ's is going to have to find in this first year what is going to be kind of his rhythm, his style and approach in the locker room, in practices, when they travel. I mean, all of that now falls on you as a head coach. He's observed that as a player, and he's observed it as afar as a TV analyst. But now to be the guy who is responsible for all of that, you know, you've got to every step of the way. And he's a tremendously hard worker. So he will figure it out, but you're going to have to give him time. And one thing, if I could give him one suggestion as a head coach, the ability to communicate is huge. That it starts there. Not only with your players, but with your coaches as well. But if and when you make a mistake, because that's going to happen, how you own that situation and that mistake is going to be key for his longevity. You know, is he going to be the coach that said, look, guys, that one tonight was on me. I should have made this adjustment, that adjustment. I own that. I'm going to be better next time. When you're able to do that and have that security in yourself, number one, and in your position, number two, to do that, I have seen buy-in be that greater and that deeper from players when I've been around coaches who have done that.
I think the thing that's interesting to me, now, a lot of people are out here saying that Dan Hurley used this Lakers position to leverage UConn into giving him more money. I think I don't really do the per sources reporting that certain people out there do. But what I will say on this is, it was very much realistic that Dan Hurley was joining the Los Angeles Lakers. I don't think the final figure they offered him was what he was looking for when they were having those negotiations. But I think the more important part and the more interesting part now is having control of those decisions at a personnel level in terms of the roster of players that you have. I think Dan Hurley, with all of his experience, would have wanted to have more of an input and sway into the front office than a first-time head coach, JJ Redick. So it's going to be interesting to me to see what Rob Pelinka does and how much of an input JJ Redick can have in these front office decisions in terms of who you draft, who you sign, who you trade for, because that, in my opinion, is more important for this Lakers team than whoever's coaching the roster, right? Because if they bring back the same team that they've had, it's going to be the same result. They've been, with the exception of the bubble, they've really just been a play-in team the whole time LeBron has been there. And, you know, they had a good run to the Western Conference Finals just over a year ago. And that was great, okay? There was a lot of things that happened to make that run possible. For any run, you've got to have the things fall in order, a little bit of luck here and there. However, if they don't make some serious roster upgrades, then I don't think it matters who the coach is for the Lakers.
Oh, no, I agree wholeheartedly. And there's an old saying I used to hear in football. It's not the X's and O's, it's the Jimmy and Joe's that make the difference. Exactly. And that is so true. And the Lakers obviously need an upgrade on their ability to defend from the perimeter. They also need some shooting on the perimeter to help open the floor up more and give outlets for both LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And JJ Redick, as a former big-time elite three-point shooter himself, recognizes the importance of that. I am sure that during their conversations, during this interview process, Rob Pelinka gave his assessment of what he thought the roster was right now, what he felt needed to be improved. And I'm sure that JJ Redick, in his conversations back, his retorts back to Rob Pelinka, this is how I'm going to want to play the game. These are the kind of players I think can help us play this particular way. So while he may not have, JJ may not have final say on the personnel, it's always important that you understand from an executive side who your coach is, how he wants to play, and you try to match as best you can available players that you want to bring into your roster to fit the way you ultimately want to play on the court. So we'll see how it all unfolds. This is their first time together too. This is JJ's first draft. What he thinks he may need or want right now could change and evolve as the season goes on, because he really, this is, again, he's starting from ground zero in this capacity.
Do you know what I think would be cool is if he coaches their summer league team, just to get a little bit of experience. And I think that's...
And I've seen that. First time head coaches do that. Yes, but I've seen it though. And it would be a smart move on his part to do that. Just to get, again, like I said earlier, to get his voice, to get a feel, just, you know, to stand up, interact with the referees. Again, even though it's summer league, it's not a regular season game, it's still a great dress rehearsal and practice. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him do that in some this summer.
You see that? JJ Redick's opened the pipeline for podcasters to become coaches. Moments are going to open the pipeline for podcasters to become front office executives. And we're going to keep it moving. But the coaching carousel keeps turning in the NBA. You know, it's not often we get first-time head coaches. Usually it's just teams exchanging, you know, coaches that have been around for a while. And we've seen that in Cleveland now today, hiring Kenny Atkinson as their head coach. And, you know, I think Kenny Atkinson did a great job when he was head coach of Brooklyn. And I think it would have gone a lot better for Brooklyn had they kept him instead of getting Steve Nash in. But now he's in Cleveland. And Scott, it goes back to what you were saying about it's not the X's and O's. It's the, what did you say was the phrase?
The Jimmy and Joe's.
It's Jimmy and Joe's. Exactly. This is the biggest question for Cleveland. You know, BJ's not here today, but we've had this conversation a million times throughout the season. Mm-hmm. What direction are they going to go in? Because as assembled, it's very tough. Unless Evan Mobley makes a major leap in shooting from the outside, it's very tough for this roster to get the best out of the tools that they have available in Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell playing alongside each other, and Jarrett Allen and Evan Mobley playing alongside each other. So with this hire for Cleveland, I don't think JB Bickerstaff did too bad of a job with the tools he had available. He gets a lot of criticism from the fans, but it's easy to blame the coach, because on paper you see talented players and you just assume that there should be a way for them to work together. But sometimes it just doesn't fit. What do you see the direction of the Cleveland Cavaliers moving forward? And if you were in that seat, what would you do with the Cavs?
Well, first of all, let me congratulate JB Bickerstaff, even though he lost his job. thought he did a really good job with the Cavaliers. They were in prime position this year. They advanced around into the playoffs. Thought he did an excellent job. Very well deserving of another opportunity to become a head coach in this league. Also, congratulations to Kenny Atkinson, who I know a little as well. You pointed out he did an excellent job in Brooklyn. And Kenny Atkinson really cut his teeth in this league as a developmental coach. And that was on full display when he was at Brooklyn. He took a young group. He got guys better. He challenged them to expand their games. Jared Allen is one of those guys, young guys that he had in Brooklyn. And we see how much better he's continued, you know, to get over the course of his career. But it started with a guy like Kenny Atkinson. So he's going to bring that component to this Cleveland team to get guys and challenge players to take a leap in terms of their individual abilities. If a guy's not quite there yet as a three-point shooter, he's going to work to get him better with that and so on and so forth. The big thing and the big question here, and you said if I'm there in Cleveland, how does Donovan Mitchell feel about this move? That I don't know. That's going to be important. What is his connection to Donovan Mitchell going to be moving forward? Because as I see it, it's important that you hold on to him with this team, because if you end up losing him, well, you better be able to, you know, and if you have to trade him, you better be able to get a lot in return to be able to stay afloat in the Eastern Conference. They were, what, the fourth seed this year? You're not trying to go backwards. And so that's how I'm looking at this. I think this team needs a little more physicality overall as I watched them. So I would be trying to figure out how I could add more physical presence to my roster, you know, maybe even in a backup capacity on the front line. That will be important. And continue, and then see if I can add another perimeter shooter. I know Max Strus, that was what he was brought in for, and Georges Niang last year. Now, hopefully that those guys are going to have better chemistry with the group you have there. But you got to add a little more up front, from I see, from a physical standpoint, to be able to play better playoff basketball, because that, to me, was one of the Achilles heels for this Cavaliers team. So, A, Donovan Mitchell, how are we going to make sure we keep him? Because that would be the most important thing to me being there. And B, how I'm going to add some size and physicality to help enhance what Donovan Mitchell does and Darius Garland does, and see if we can't get better and keep moving up the ladder in the Eastern Conference.
Now, if our good friend BJ Armstrong was here, he would be saying Donovan Mitchell should be playing the lead guard position. So, Scott, do you think that the Cavs at some point are going to move on from Darius Garland? Or do you think, with the uncertainty of whether or not Mitchell wants to be in Cleveland long term, they'd look to move him while they still can?
Well, see, that's why I told you in the beginning. Let's say, for the sake of this conversation, that you know Donovan is going to be back and you're going to have him locked up for another 4 or 5 years. It is incumbent upon you as an executive to at least explore what BJ is talking about there. Are we better with Donovan playing the one? Because we're small in the backcourt when both he and Darius start. Mm-hmm. But if I can play Donovan at the one and then have a two guard that's 6'5 to 6'7, now that changes the dynamic of our team. And this is no disrespect to Darius Garland, who they drafted, who was homegrown. And it's, a lot of times that can be emotionally tough for teams to let go of somebody that you've groomed and he's become an all-star. You've paid him. He's part of the fabric of who you are. But at least behind the scenes, you have to be looking and exploring, is there an opportunity to go get a two guy? You know, you look at a guy like a Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. He's not an all-star, but he's a two-way.
He's a champion. Two guard. That's what he is.
And he's a champion. He has the defensive chops that you want. He can shoot the three. Do you put a pairing like that together? And would he be somebody of interest to somebody like the Denver Nuggets? So those are the kind of things you have to look at. But again, it all starts with your comfort level and knowledge of being able to keep Donovan Mitchell, because he is, in my opinion, without question, the star of this team, and someone that if I were there, you're going to try to figure out how we're going to continue to keep, build around, and move forward with.
Yeah, if you look at recent years, no team has been able to repeat as champions in a while now since that Warriors dynasty. But the two players who have been able to get multiple championships are Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Jrue Holiday. So having a defensive-minded guard on your roster is imperative to success in the modern NBA. I think if you have two guys who are shot creators, who are great offensively but defensively, you know, although you can see an uptick in their effort this season, ultimately they're not guys that can go and lock down, especially in a league now where there's so much talented perimeter scoring available on almost every team in the NBA. I think they definitely need to go, and KCP is a fantastic shout of a guy that they're going to that they should be trying to acquire. And then we've got one more coaching rumor at this point, because James Borrego was in the mix for the Lakers job and for the Cavs job. I'm going to ask you this, Scott. Because now it's rumored James Borrego is going to be the assistant for the Detroit Pistons. Not the assistant, the head coach for the Detroit Pistons. Can I tell the truth to the people on this situation?
That's who you are, Mo. So I'm ready for the truth.
Now, this is the reason why earlier in the show I compared coaching in the NBA to Game of Thrones. Because oftentimes it's not about the kind of coach. And I'm not discrediting James Borrego or any of these coaches in this manner.
And I work with James Borrego in Orlando, so I know James Borrego.
He's a very talented coach, right?
Yeah, good man.
However,
good man.
A lot of these decisions are based upon who you're friends with and who your allies are in the NBA. And if you look at what the Pistons, if they do go with James Borrego, who is an assistant in New Orleans, hired by Trajan Langdon, who recently became the president of the Detroit Pistons organization, who just happened to be represented by Arne Tellem, who is the vice president, or was it vice chief executive of
vice
the Pistons
chair,
organization?
Vice chair.
Okay,
there
we go.
Right, yes. Okay.
But you can see how in Game of Thrones, how it's all family trees. You can see the same thing happening in the NBA with agencies and with friendships and relationships just like that. So, you know, for the Detroit Pistons, I don't know how things are going to go. I know that there were certainly better candidates they could have hired for their president of basketball operations job. One of them might be on the show with me right now. And I feel like they might have had, you know, a better job at recruiting maybe a coach that fits this roster better rather than someone that they've just worked with before or someone that they're friends with. So that's what I will say on the Detroit Pistons. But Scott, from your perspective, having worked with James Borrego, what would he bring to that roster if he was made their head coach?
First of all, let me add a comment to what you just said, because I think it's, I know it's very important. I shouldn't even say I think, I know it is. See, when you're in the position of leading a franchise, whether, you know, we're talking ownership, presidents, GMs, coaches, head coaches, whomever, whatever leadership role you're in, you've got to make decisions that are best, firmly believe are best for the betterment of the organization. And it can't take into account personal relationships, you know, nepotism or anything of that nature. You got to do what's best for the organization. I've always believed that. And the organizations that do that, you see continuously win. Now, if they happen to align on a couple of occasions, fantastic. But if that is your guiding light, then I have not seen that be overly successful, whether we're talking about the NBA, you know, NFL, Major League Baseball. You're going to make decisions on when you're talking about adding talent, players, coaches, executives to your team. It's got to be based on who are the great good performers and who can do the best at their job. So let me, I just wanted to add to that because I really
get
what you said. Now, James Borrego coming to Detroit. He was as a, you know, I worked with him. He actually became our interim coach for a short time in Orlando, did a nice job with a young team. Very even keel personality. And so that not knowing the players very well in the Detroit locker room, he will be able to come in. He'll be very approachable. He'll have a way that he wants to play. He has a certain level of patience that I think that's required to play with this young group. Now, the key is going to be, and here's what I know about being in the Detroit community, can he connect as a head coach to what people in Detroit see as what being a Detroit Piston is all about? You know, and a lot of that's toughness, defense, and James Borrego is a really good offensive coach, you know, and he understands that defense is important, and that will be a big part of it. So it'll be, if he ends up with the job, there's a lot to turn around, not only in the locker room, but from a perception standpoint in the entire community. So it's a heavy lift to ask any coach, to be honest with you, but how he's going to connect not only with that locker room, if it's him or whoever the coach would be, you not only got to connect with that locker room to develop a team that can show signs of winning. Now, I know I hear them talking about, oh, well, you know, we're still building or whatever the case may be. What I know about that community, yeah, it's important to sell a plan and a vision, but you got to win there if you want people to come out, especially when you're talking about Detroit basketball. You know,
would it be fair for you to say that teams take on the personality of the head coach?
Oh, I think it's very fair. It's, you know, you can say that about your best player and your head coach. You've got to, I've always been a firm believer in that teams that are successful have a true identity. And we've talked a lot of this about this on the show. I think nobody's done it better than the Miami Heat year in and year out. They take on the identity, you know, obviously Pat Riley's at the top of the chain, but Eric Spoelstra as a coach who's really an extension of Pat Riley, they are terrific at that. They have stated, this is who we are. And every day they coach to it, they practice to it, they trade to it, they communicate to the fan base, this is who we are. And it's so consistent. That's why it's been so sustainable. And you're remiss if you don't mention the Miami Heat being involved in any conversation in terms of being a good team for the upcoming season, because they are that consistent and they have a true culture and identity. So that's going to be extremely important there in Detroit, because obviously over the past decade they have not exhibited that at all. There is no identity, and I can tell you firmly, having been in Detroit when we were really good during that decade from 2000 to 2011-12, that we definitely had an identity that reverberated, represented the city of Detroit, and they haven't done anything remotely like that since.
Yeah, they're lacking in the toughness of those. When you think of the Detroit Pistons teams and everyone who's won in Detroit, it's just toughness is the only word that springs to mind. And right now, you know, it's rumored that they're going to move Isaiah Stewart. And then after that, where's the toughness really coming from in that team?
It's hard to sell a finesse team in Detroit, Michigan. I can tell you that. I don't care whether it's hockey, football.
But I also think it's hard for a finesse team to win in the NBA.
I agree with that. There's no question about it.
The Warriors, who people point to as a finesse team, they've got the biggest bully in the NBA on their roster.
Right, yeah, exactly.
they can be finesse because they got Draymond Green kicking everyone in the face if they try mess with the Warriors. So it's like, its toughness is a prerequisite. And it just, you know, like you gave the example of the Miami Heat, I think Ime Udoka is a great example of what he did in Houston last season. And they took on his personality. They got guys who fitted his personality, and Dylan Brooks and the likes.
Yeah. And Mo, you can appreciate this. Say what you want. Ime Udoka helped set this Celtics team on the path that you know, obviously ultimately turned into a championship this year.
Yep.
You know, how he came in the door and early on made him ruffle some feathers and all that. But he got those guys to buy into the importance of being a strong defensive team, strong minded. They go to the finals that, you know, year in 2022. No question. And so I expect to see the same from this Houston team. You see a culture developing and emerging there. And they're going to be a team that is going to have to be reckoned with in the Western Conference.
Yep. And to his credit, Joe Mazzulla as well. He's got a different personality to Ime Udoka. He might not be so kind of loud and in your face with it, but Joe Mazzulla, I say it as a compliment, is a psychopath. Like the way he showed his players UFC fights before the game. Mm-hmm. he shows players, he sits down, I think he sat down with Jason Tatum and watched The Dark Knight to see how the Batman reacts to the Joker. And the team took on his personality this season.
Give him credit, and I would say this to any aspiring coach. You have to be true to who you are as a person. You can take certain strategies and tidbits from certain coaches, but you can't try to become that personality. So, you know, like, you know, to go back and, you know, if you look now, you talk about Ime. Joe Mazzulla is not Ime the person. So he didn't try to do what Ime did to be the Ime the person. He stayed true to his personality, which is huge. I've seen, you know, I can go back in my time years ago coaching in college when a lot of guys as college coaches, especially who had worked with Bobby Knight, when they got the opportunity to be a head coach, tried to emulate Bobby Knight and all of those different things he did. That worked for him. That wasn't going to work for them as well. It's not authentic. That was authentically Bobby Knight.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I don't mean to digress on that, but that's it's a big thing to me because players are very, very smart and they know if you're being somebody other than yourself, who you really are. So
it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the mess of the Detroit Pistons moving forward. But, you know, that's a nice little episode talking about coaching and the coaching changes around the NBA. We're going to be here. We're going to talk free agency, player signings, draft, all that kind of stuff. But Scott, while we got you here, I wanted to ask you about a rumor that I've been seeing across the internet regarding a player that you picked in the NBA draft. And that's one Mitchell Robinson of the New York Knicks. Now, a lot of fans on Twitter and whatnot, waking up to the fact that, you know, your former colleagues in New York like to sign players from a certain agency. As I said earlier, this is Game of Thrones that we're dealing with, right? All House of CAA is where they want to get their players from. With the reports that they may be trading Mitchell Robinson, obviously Isaiah Hartenstein had a great run in the playoffs. He stepped up. He did the dirty work. He was grabbing offensive rebounds like no man's business. He played fantastic basketball, and you can't knock him. But now this summer, they have to re-sign Isaiah Hartenstein. They have to try and re-sign OG Anunoby. And maybe to do that, they're going to have to give up Mitch Robinson. But I personally think that it would be a mistake to trade Mitchell Robinson at this juncture. What are your thoughts on it?
Obviously, Mo, you know, I'm a Mitchell Robinson guy, fan. I, you know, just watch the young man grow. Like, he is super talented, best offensive rebounding big man in the league. And one of the best rim protectors in the league, and was on his way to being an all-defensive player, one of the all-defensive teams this year, in my opinion, had he stayed healthy. And that leads me to the point, though. He hasn't been able to stay healthy for the majority of his career. Mitchell's only played 70 games or more in the season one time. So that is a concern, and this is where the financial realization comes into play when you're talking about team building. Isaiah Hartenstein, these 2 years here, been very good, been available a lot, played, like I said, extremely well. So now he's, you know, you have this early bird rights, so you can pay him up to almost $18 million this year. And he probably maybe could get more on the open market, but you want to, and keeping him, which I know they want to keep, and they've and what's been successful to New York Knicks has been the two-headed monster at the center position, both he and Mitchell. Now, but if you sign him at that number, Isaiah was, you know, before making $8 or $9 million. Now to jump up an additional 10. Mitchell's got two more years. You know, he was on a declining contract. And this year coming up, I think he's about 14 and a half, and then he'll be down to like 13. But that's still, now you're looking at, you know, $32 million invested in that center position, which makes it difficult. You're probably going to need to get a lesser priced option if you can, because you talked about OG. You gave up a lot to get OG and Anunoby. You got to re-sign him, and that number is going to be really big.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, you probably,
and so it should be,
start somewhere 35. Yeah, exactly. That's probably going to start somewhere in the $35 million range. So all of that's at play, which makes the whole Mitchell thing, that that's a big part of that. Not having so much money invested in the center position at one time, and again, he hasn't been available. So now they'll try to find someone to back up Isaiah, if they do this, if these rumors are accurate, and they are looking to trade him, then they have to find somebody. And look, you got Jericho Sims there. Maybe
he can make a leap.
Maybe Jericho Sims can make that leap. He's making $4 or $5 million as the backup to Isaiah. You have it covered, but you've gone on and really invested in OG, and you know, maybe leaving yourself open too to add another player that's going to make a lot more money and not have so much invested in the center position.
Yeah, I think the Dallas Mavericks showed the importance of having 48 minutes of consistent production from the center position with Lively and Gafford being able to play. But that obviously works because Lively's still on his rookie contract, and Gafford's contract isn't huge either. And you saw that even with the Celtics. They had Horford and Porzingis playing that five spot in the finals as they come in and out. So it's going to be interesting to see how it progresses. I know the Knicks still have Bogdanovich's contract that they could include in trades as well. There's been some rumors about Paul George, if you combine Robinson and Bogdanovich together for the Clippers, if he doesn't want to stay there. There's some rumors about Kuzma coming over from the Wizards. And by the way, I think if the Wizards get Mitchell Robinson, that would be amazing for them. Especially with the number two pick in the draft this year and Bilal Coulibaly, the way he's developed. And I think he's on track to have a huge season next year. But like I said before, we're going to be here all offseason long, breaking everything down for you. Scott, I appreciate you jumping in with us today.
Oh, man, I enjoyed it. As always, my brother Mo, this is great.
You're at home here now.
NBA basketball with you. Exactly.
Hey, anytime. Shout out to everyone who put in order for the You Know The Vibes t-shirts. Helps the show keep going. The deadline was yesterday. However, if you still want one and you're only listening to the podcast now, the link is still available. Go to getbuckets.today. Just type that in on your web browser. You'll get to the store or the hoopgenius.com and click on shop. It will link you there. And you can get one of your own t-shirts and subscribe to the show. YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. Scott will be back on the show before you know it. BJ will be back. Absolutely. He's got some business to attend to with the NBA draft coming up this week. But we're not stopping. Appreciate each and every one of you. Hope you guys all, especially the European fans, the UK fans, managed to get some sleep after the NBA finals as well. And until next time, you guys know the vibes. Get buckets.